Hey, greetings, Internet. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. Welcome to episode 163, Making a Lot with Very Little, with Meredith Koch. Meredith is a film director out of Los Angeles, California, who brings a disposition for non-linear storytelling and sees beauty in all of the details. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, we talk about doing your best work with whatever resources you have, her first learning experience in filmmaking, social media and getting inspired by competition, the power of dreams, and the need for more diversity in front of and behind the camera. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/163. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a media production company helping creative professionals and entrepreneurs build platforms that connect their work, stories, and mission to their audience. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/163. All right, you ready for this interview with Meredith? Let's get into it. Meredith, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little about what you do?
So my name is Meredith Koch. I'm a director. I am based out of Los Angeles, but I'm from Portland, Oregon. Woohoo. Love it. Went to UCLA for undergrad film school, and then I did AFI for graduate film school, and I've been out for 1 year, almost exactly.
Congratulations. I remember because I went down there a year ago for the graduation, and I'm just like, wow, 1 year. So what's 1 year of being a AFI graduate like?
Oh, man. Ups and downs, let me tell you. it's really been quite a journey. There's been some projects that I've done with very little resources, and I'm very proud of them. One is a documentary that I just recently finished about Janet Chang and her experience of cerebral palsy. That one was very, very rewarding. And again, I think I made the most of very little resources. Another is a spec commercial that I did in the fall with Nathan Mielke. And again, another experience of bringing people together and, you know, making a lot with very little.
Yeah.
And then I think the downtime has been really difficult to navigate. You have to stay busy, stay creative. This last year, I've been promoting Raksha, taking that to festivals. And then I've also been, you know, working on films and, you know, being below the line again. So it's like this very interesting thing. One day I'll be on the red carpet being interviewed for Raksha, and then the next day I'm like, you know, the bottom of the barrel on some cool film.
Yeah.
And, you know, it all is a journey.
Yeah. When did you know you wanted to be a filmmaker? Was this something that ever since you were a little girl, you wanted to do it? Or was it something that you found as you grew up and became an adult?
Well, when I was a teenager, there was no like photography or film courses in my high school. I grew up in a very rural area outside of Portland, and I took theater, and I found that I really liked actors. Like I thought they were the strangest, most interesting people ever. And I thought I wanted to be an actor. I loved reading plays. I loved, you know, looking at blocking and watching scenes unfold in class. Like the work was so psychological and interesting to me. But then when I would get up and perform, I was like, this is the worst experience ever. Why do people do this, you know? So it didn't feel right to be performing. And when I graduated, I moved to LA and I took my first film course because I thought, if I want to be an actor, I need to take like a film course. I need to, you know, learn about the other end of things. And that's when I fell in love analyzing movies. And I said, oh my God, I've never thought about all of the people that make a movie. Like, it just hit me so hard. The hundreds of people that go into that, and all you see as an audience are the actors.
Yeah.
So you know, it took me a while to realize directing was my calling. I think I was very overwhelmed with that idea in the beginning. I'm like, who can do that? Like, who can do that? Yeah. It was overwhelming how many decisions had to be made by one person that I'm like, I don't think I could actually make every decision that needed to be made in order to make a movie. I feel like I could weigh in on stuff, but I don't know if I can make every decision. And the more that I studied film, I went on and I took some Super 8 classes. I moved back to Portland, you know, regrounded myself, took some Super 8 film classes at Northwest Film Center.
Yeah. Great place.
Yeah. I just wandered around Portland with my camera. And I just started telling stories kind of without thinking about it. And I was very inspired by experimental filmmakers, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think my work was just very experimental and dreamy and visual.
Was there ever a moment where you're looking at what it takes to be a director and needing to give yourself a sense of permission to say, I'm going to go do this now?
Yeah, I think that came subconsciously with holding a camera. I would never call myself a DP. And I love my DPs so much. They get me, you know, they can climb into my brain and extract my ideas and put them in front of a million people. And what they do is amazing. But I think it's very important for directors that are just starting to learn film or directing, that is, to actually shoot on a camera and to actually edit their material.
Yeah.
That, I mean, those lessons, not only, you know, what mistakes did I make, what can I do differently, but you're like watching yourself work. Like when you're editing your own footage, you remember that person that was shooting it. You remember what you were seeing on set. Why am I not seeing that now? How do I really, it's like for me, how do I resurrect what I originally wanted before? But somehow through the process of making it, I'm not feeling that in my, my outtakes.
Yeah.
So you're just like assembling, reassembling. I think that process is interesting. And kind of cool, the last year I've gotten to revisit that because now here I am making my own stuff again, you know, with very little resources, and I'm editing my own footage again, and I still have DPs, thank God, who are shooting for me.
That's awesome.
I don't think I could go back to shooting, but it's very humbling to look back on that stuff and to see my little shaky hands try to capture these images around Portland.
Yeah. What's interesting as you're talking to a question that's been in my mind for some time now with creative people is this idea of realizing a creative vision. Because, you know, we all have stories that we're drawn to, images that we see. So what are some of the ways that you've been realizing your creative vision and even maturing in your creative vision over the years?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, I felt very free creatively from the beginning. And that set the bar kind of high for myself. My stuff in the beginning wasn't narrative. It was very experimental. It was weird. I was influenced by Maya Deren's work. And I was like, wow, a woman can make some really interesting stuff that's provocative and sort of lives on. And I was really inspired by that. And I didn't judge my work. Mm-hmm. Now that I've gone through 2 film programs, I've got so much knowledge. I know how to craft a narrative now better than I did then. However, I am so much more critical of my work now. And with the influence of social media, you know, the competition is like in my face. Every day I go onto Instagram, it's there. Yeah. How do I make my work look that good? How do I, and I'm so inspired. It really comes from being inspired by other people. So I have to run with that. Who I am today is a person that has been through, you know, 4 years of film school. Mm-hmm. Who I am today is a person that has a social media account, and I post my work and I follow other people. I hope that I can thread back in some of the old, like, creative interests that I used to have, because a lot of my experimental work was based on dreams, actually, that I would have. And it felt so unique. And now I worry that since I'm not pulling from my subconscious as much as I used to, I worry that I'm just sort of living on the surface.
Yeah.
And I'm scared that my future work won't have the same, you know, I don't even know how to describe it, but the same quality. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I just want to hold on to who I really am.
Yeah. Boy, isn't that just the struggle for all of us? I mean, not only holding on to who we are, but knowing who we are.
Yeah. And it's funny, in these film programs, I know that they're trying to push the students to do that. You know, go up there and present yourself, and, you know, why does this story matter to you? And it's like, I feel like I've had to define myself so many times in front of people that maybe didn't really care that much, that I it's like I want to close a little bit more and only have really meaningful conversation about where I'm at. Like, pitching myself in a certain way can feel very draining, but speaking really honestly about where I'm at, you know, that's life-giving.
Yeah. Wow. So I imagine that as you're developing new projects, as you're making the most of the limited resources that you have, that you really have to rely on some systems in order to consistently do this. So what kind of systems or resources do you have in place that allow you to have a sustainable career in business?
You know, the funny thing is I'm so sensitive to my home environment. And I always have been. Even as a little girl, I would always be sort of rearranging my furniture in my room. I would be reorganizing my dolls. I always felt like my home was a sanctuary. I create so much from home. I do my editing at home. I do my writing at home. I take meetings when I'm at home. You know, a lot of people go to coffee shops, and I definitely went through a phase of doing that, but my best work comes from me in my own space. It feels so primitive, and I don't know. It's just like, also not being from Los Angeles, I had to make my apartment sort of hold something that felt true to me. So yeah, I think that's a big one for me. And then also I try not to stretch myself thin over friendships and relationships that are sort of superficial. I try to have meaningful relationships that allow me to be myself. I think when I do my worst work, it's because I'm in a place of trying to please other people. Mm. And it's so easy to fall into that without knowing it. So, you know, I think it really comes from taking care of your mental health and sleeping and, you know, if you can write down your dreams. I would love to reopen my dream journal and try to access some of the wisdom that is there.
Yeah. That whole, there's like a discipline around dream journaling, because it's like I think the last time that I learned about it was you have to like force yourself to wake up or something and write things down while you're between like sleep and wake state. I don't know if I'm that disciplined.
You know what's funny is sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and it's like I'm right in the middle of a dream. And that's when it's like super fresh. And, you know, you go get your glass of water, use the restroom or something, and you're like, whoa, I was just in the middle of something crazy. So it is weird, because apparently you forget things like within every minute of yourself being awake. But it's true. I think I went through 2 years of documenting my dreams. Wow. And that was before I moved to Los Angeles. And every dream was about making movies in LA. And I couldn't put it together. You know, I tried to explain this to my family and they're like, you're 17. This is, you know, like, I don't know, you know, how do you justify like moving because of your actual dreams? But yeah, they were very telling and I listened to them and I'm really happy that I did.
How do you think your dreams have changed since moving to LA?
Well, sadly, I think I'm not either dreaming as much right now, or I have very intense dreams sometimes. I recently was working, not as a director, I was working below the line, as they say, on an indie, and I was dealing with some very intense personalities from the actors. And I feel like it's so much easier for me to deal with that when I'm, you know, directing them. But when I'm having to just sort of cater to these personalities and not really show my true self, yeah, it can be kind of traumatizing. And so lately I've been having a lot of dreams about that, you know, revisiting those conversations and sort of wanting to tell people that I'm a director, but afraid to tell people that I'm a director. I think that's just the challenge for all creatives when you have your, you know, your day job. It's like, do you, you know, like make people's ears bleed about your creative stuff? Or do you just sort of put on your day job hat and you just do it? For me, I've been doing production since I was like maybe 18. So it's been over a decade. And I'm hoping that I can transfer from doing roles that I don't feel like are really me to just directing stuff.
Yeah.
And that's really where I'm at right now, is I might not be directing super creative, intensely personal work every day, but at least I'm wearing the role that I should be wearing. I'm wearing the uniform that fits.
Yeah.
Which is sort of why I've been interested in getting into commercials and music videos this last year. I think that might be a great segue for me to just continue to direct and to sort of find my way into things that, you know, don't directly relate to me on the surface.
Interesting.
Yeah.
As you're sharing, and as we talked a little bit about the struggle of comparison and Instagram and all the and the often lack of process that isn't really embraced as much today, mm-hmm. how do you approach learning new things and sharing those new things that you're learning?
I know that was so much easier when I was in school, in a way, because we were always evaluating each other's work. And, you know, AFI has a very particular way of putting everyone's work up there and getting everybody's opinion on it. Mm-hmm. I think I still carry that with me, actually. I definitely remember a lot of those critiques, not just with my film at all, but with other people's films, and sort of seeing and hearing the trials and tribulations of other filmmakers and really feeling like I'm not alone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not alone in this. And it's really hard to make just a bad film.
But boy, can we sit on the couch and tell them how they should have done it.
Yes. I mean, it's very easy to make a bad film. But you have to applaud the people that are trying it over and over again. Mm-hmm. You have to be your biggest cheerleader in this process. And I don't have a manager or anything right now, but I hope that someday when I do, they can kind of help, you know, pick me up when I need it. Because it's a little bit of a lonely journey. Mm-hmm. And if you're not supporting yourself, then you can kind of step back and say, what's the point? Mm-hmm. You give your entire self to everything you create. So you've got to be taking care of that person at the end of the day. Yeah. And I think since graduating, going to the movies again, having time to go to the movies, I think that's the best place to be inspired.
What film recently has inspired you in a way where you actually want to make something? Because I think there's two types of inspiration from film. I think there's the film that you watch and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm a hack. I never want to do this again. And then there's the film that you watch and you're just like, yeah, that right there is why I make movies.
You know, I realized that it's not, and this is probably the part of me that's so now critical and in my head, I don't know if it's possible for me to be completely satisfied with a movie. But what makes me love a movie is what I've noticed, just one scene that is perfection. And I can just sit in the moment of that scene way after it's happened and enjoy the rest of the movie. I think, I don't know if that's true for other filmmakers, but that's very true for me. It's one scene. And this year, we've had some very interesting horror films that were very cool, like Hereditary and A Quiet Place. I'm writing a horror feature right now.
Oh, cool.
So they were very inspiring. And I think when you're writing horror for the first time, you're wondering, you know, when am I going to break the suspense? And when am I going to shock? And when am I going to hold? Or when am I going to, you know, misdirect the audience. There's so much going on there.
Yeah.
In the structure of it, that, you know, that's very inspiring to watch those movies and say, yeah, that moment really scared me because of this thing that happened right before it. Yeah. So for me, it's like learning that structure has been really, really good. I don't think there was a lot of horror at AFI. On the screens.
Yeah. Probably just the existential part of life behind the scenes.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, making for the film festivals this last year, it's come up a couple of times, this like newfound type of horror that that delivers an important message about our society. Mm-hmm. I forget what they called it. But it's like, it's self-aware horror films. It's not just horror to be scary. It's like Get Out, you know, it's a suspense and a horror because there's a lot politically going on in that movie.
Yeah.
That's interestingly enough can just slide through the cracks for someone that's not, you know, totally aware of what's going on in our world.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool to me. I hope that, you know, with the feature that I'm writing, that there's more to it for the audience. That's important to me. And I think that was a part of what was going on with Raksha too. It wasn't a horror, but it was a very dark film. And I do want the audience to take away this whole nature versus nurture question that the whole film is really around. For our Q&As at the film festivals, people are like asking me, oh, you know, is she cursed? Is she not cursed? What do you mean by the ending? And I'm like, well, that's what I mean by the ending. You asking me this question is what I mean by the ending, you know, not getting all the answers.
Yeah. I remember after my wife and I watched the film, that was the exact conversation that we were having was mm-hmm. around that question. So it's like, well done on your end for facilitating that conversation.
Yeah. It's hard to make, Nitya, the lead who played Archana, it was hard to make her like scary in the end, you know, because she's so likable and lovable and, you know, not what you expect. And I think that's what makes the movie so interesting. We're used to like more scary, like big men, like, you know what I mean? It's just a totally different type of a person. But when you give that moment to a female, I think they express it in a way that we're not used to. So I'm very happy with how the scene turned out in the store. And I'm hoping that the vibration that happens after the climax, the moment between the sisters, you know, has more meaning because of what had just happened. I find that a lot of my work is nonlinear. And when I'm writing, I get so in my head about what order scenes are supposed to happen. Like when I'm in a creative process, I'll get an idea about a really cool scene. Just kind of like what happens to me with movies that I really like. I'm like, that one scene, it makes me kind of forget about the other scenes because I'm so excited about that one scene. And then I kind of have to work backwards creatively because I'm like, wait, that one scene, it could be the end scene for gosh sakes. And then I have to be like, what would lead me there and retrace my steps. So I work nonlinearly in probably every phase of it. And Raksha was written linearly and I didn't write it. The writers wrote it, you know, to have all the flashbacks in the beginning and then here we are today and it's the day of the cleansing. But for me, when I was working with David Kebish, the editor, we wove back in those flashbacks throughout the story. And it felt so much better to withhold some of that information and have the audience be like, oh, that's why she's wearing red. Like, what was up with the red in her closet? So yeah, that's definitely, I guess it's my thing. It makes writing kind of challenging, but at least you can reorganize yourself in the edit, you know?
Exactly. Well, it seems to be, the kind of in thing right now too, being nonlinear, because As you were describing the withholding of information, it reminded me of Westworld season two and how they very much withheld almost everything the entire season. And you're just, and even in the finale, you're like, I don't know what just happened. And it's just like you withheld the climax from us. You know, it's just like, so there's something societally where we're embracing this non-linear form of storytelling and wanting to be confused almost.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so strange. And it goes hand in hand with dreams too, in a weird way for me. And I think it does have a place in narrative. Absolutely. It's an interesting technique. I feel like it's also just human nature. We're designed to perceive time in a certain way. But, you know, when we get deja vu or when someone discovers something really huge that they never knew about someone they've always known, you know, experiences like that make you kind of step back and get really philosophical about time. It's just a very strange thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we could talk for hours just on the philosophy of time and things like that. But one question that I do want to ask is something that I saw recently that you were promoting on social media. But I'll ask it in question form to see if you jump to the same thing that I'm thinking of. But what's one big idea or cause that you're actively working to make happen for the future?
To have more diversity in media. That's in the on camera and behind the camera. Yes. That is so important to me. And we learn by seeing others do. So I do feel like I'm practicing what I preach in a way, because I do think we need way more female directors and way more people of color directing movies. There's so many stories out there that have yet to be told because of the structure of our industry. And it's really up to us to change that.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you do to bring out those directors, bring out those stories, and almost create an alternate industry where these stories can emerge from?
I make sure that anything that I am making is with people that are not exactly like me. I seek out stories that are from people that are not like me, with different backgrounds. And I try to lift those stories up. I also make sure that, you know, whoever is on the screen is someone different. And I really want it to become normalized.
Yeah.
It's such a, there's so much power in creating a movie and putting it all together and putting it out there. People are absorbing so many messages from your work without you even knowing it sometimes. So for the last few years, I've been trying to be as conscious as possible about what I'm putting out into the world. Who are my protagonists? Who's leading the story? What am I saying about culture? What am I saying about family and identity? I think stories that are showcasing real women are short in supply, so much so that our culture just doesn't even know what it's like to be inside of a woman's head. We know one experience, one gaze, and we, you know, it's true. Time is up. It's time that we start to listen to one another and hear each other's stories and empathize and lift up people that have felt silenced. It's such a big responsibility because this stuff goes way back. Mm-hmm. And we can't even see where it started. Mm-hmm. We don't even know when it started. But here we are today, and we're only getting one side of the picture in all of our media. And that is so powerful. I think directors like, you know, Lynn Ramsey really help an audience get on the other side of a character and really understand what a female character is all about. And that work, you know, inspires me. And seeing other directors just chomping at the bit, going for it, making content with whatever resources they have, that is so inspiring to me. Mm-hmm. On this last documentary that I was doing, my DP, Lauren Gutierrez, said something that stood out to me, and I did put it on my social media. We were shooting with a little, you know, DSLR that we had borrowed for free, and I was so excited with the stuff that she was shooting. I was like, yay, this is great. You're doing it. This is exactly what I wanted. And she was operating, pulling focus, doing everything herself, climbing up these crazy ropes and ladders and things in the gym. I mean, she's so strong. And she said, you know, we might not have the big fancy cameras that the boys have, but we're making just as good work. Mm,
that's awesome.
And it was so powerful to hear her say that. So yeah, I guess my challenge moving forward is, you know, asking for what I need. Mm-hmm. If it's a project that I think really deserves some great equipment, I need to put myself out there and have the courage to ask. Yeah. It's so much easier to say, oh, they won't help me. They don't have time for me, or, you know, all this self-pity stuff, but really demanding what we deserve.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's so inspiring to hear you share that story and that message.
Yeah. Well, you know, she it came from her, and I mentioned it to her, and she said, I don't even remember saying that. You said it. You said it.
That's always awesome when people say things that impact us and they don't even realize that they're doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, just a couple more questions. I just want to say that this has been a fantastic conversation. I've enjoyed just all that you've been sharing. One of the questions that I ask everyone on Getting Work to Work is about a book that has impacted your life. So what's one book or even resource that has impacted your life and that you keep returning to?
Anything written by Sylvia Plath will always have my heart. A Bell Jar was the first book of hers that I read. And I was traveling around Ireland as a idiotic 20-year-old working on the tutors. And I was by myself for 3 months. And it was such a strange experience, like riding on trains and not knowing anyone and staying in hostels. And I just felt like every day I was getting to know myself in a very, like, kind of spiritual way, because I wasn't influenced by anything of my home or, you know, it's just you. It's like when you go into the woods and it's just you by yourself. Mm-hmm. I felt like that for 3 months, and I read her book, and even though it's very dark, it's very real. And after I finished her book, I learned that she couldn't get published, and that people would read A Bell Jar and say, it's just about a girl complaining. Hmm. And I that so resonated with me. I think women are they have so much to say, and that's the response that we get sometimes. Yeah. You know, we're silenced. And there's so many artists out there, men and women, who never got to see their art be recognized in their lifetime. That is so interesting to me, what that must be like. I certainly hope that doesn't happen to me, but in the end, you know, that's what we're doing. We're creating work that outlives us. And I really felt like, you know, Sylvia Plath was connecting to me through her work.
That's awesome. Well, final question for you. Where can people go to learn more about you and the work you do?
Oh, yeah. Please visit mercoch.com, M-E-R, and then my last name, K-O-C-H.com. I post all of my work on there, and it's all connected to my Vimeo, so you don't even have to do any more search. And there's also a contact me page on there if you want to ask me any questions about my work, or if you want to have, you know, an offline conversation about your own work and what you're going through. I've actually done that. There are some directors that I've found online and messaged them, and they message back.
Oh, cool.
And that's been really, you know, inspiring and helpful.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Meredith, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you just about your work and about the things that you're passionate about. And just thank you for the ways that you show up and share who you are to the world.
Thank you, Chris. This is wonderful. You gave me a platform to speak today, and it was a wonderful experience to do that.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It means so much to me that you do. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm @CM Studios. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.